Welcome to the Proposal Podcast. I'm Sarah McDonnelly. I'm here today with Emily Meredith and the always wonderful Garth Nix.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Garth, you're here today to talk about the latest in the Old Kingdom series, Golden Hand, which is a book I've been very excited about for a long time. I should let you talk about it. There's some new characters and new lands.
Sure. I'm quite happy for you just to say you like it a lot.
I liked it a lot.
Like, thank you very
I've
much.
Been, you know, I'm going to rave on
it. No spoilers, though. Remember that not all of us have read it.
I have to not spoil, and I have to not just talk about how much I like this series the whole time.
Thank you very much. It's always, and it's hard for me to talk about it without spoilers as well. Golden Hand is the fifth book in the Old Kingdom series, as it is now. It was a trilogy for quite a long time, and then Clariel, the prequel, came along, and then there were four, and now there's going to be five. But Golden Hand actually picks up the main story of the original trilogy. It continues pretty much straight on from the events of The Creature in the Case, which is a short story which is in Across the Wall, the collection, and that takes place 6 months after the end of Abhorsen. So we're pretty much 6 months on from the third book, Abhorsen, and going straight back into that story there. So we're back with Liriel, who is discovering more about her role as the Abhorsen in waiting, and she's learning that trade, the business of making the dead stay dead, and dealing with free magic creatures and so on, and coming to terms with that whole heritage after being brought up in the Library of the Clare. So Liriel is back. The book is to a great degree about her. It's also about the young man Nicholas Sayre, someone from the non-magical side of the wall, from Ancelstier, but who's been drawn into the, I guess, the deep history of the Old Kingdom through the events of Liriel and Abhorsen. So we're back with those two, and they have an adventure that, I guess, converging adventures, shall we say. But I also do introduce another new character, a young woman called Ferrin, who is from one of the clans that roam the north. So we get to see a lot more of the land beyond the Old Kingdom. So I guess geographically the book extends further, and we also see a bit more about how everything works in terms of free magic and how the clans of the north deal with free magic sorcerers and so on, in a very different way from the Old Kingdom. But once again, it's an adventure story. You'll see some of, I hope, favourite old characters, and once again there are questions to deal with free magic, with death. Death as a place that can be entered by the Abhorsens and necromancers and so on. So you've got all of that back in the mix again.
It's such a pleasure to go back to this world. It was great when Clariel came out to revisit, but this time we're revisiting the characters that from earlier books, and that to me was just like so amazing.
Thank you.
It was just really great, and this book has so much going on. The two sort of stories that you mentioned, with familiar characters and new characters converging, and you know, there's a bit of romance, which was really good. And I'm doing it again, aren't I? I'm just talking about how much I love the book instead of asking intelligent questions.
It's fine by me. I mean, you can just keep going. I'll just sit back here. I'll drink my water. And
how did it feel for you to return to Liriel and Nick and Sam after so long?
I always feel like I never really left. It's an interesting question. I guess to readers, of course, with the big gaps between the books. I'm just trying to remember. I think Abhorsen was 2003, I think, and then Clariel was 2013. I've written too many books. It makes it hard to remember exactly what year they came out, and then another few years, of course, until Golden Hand. But to me, I never left, because the stories were always in my head. I was always thinking about the stories. Clariel, for example, began... I made a note when I was writing Liriel, and I actually did go back and check this. It was in 1999. I could look at my writing notebook when I was writing the beginning of Liriel, and there's a character there. And I thought, who is that? How did she get to be that person? And I made a note that I wanted to explore how Claw of the Mask began. And Clariel is largely about that. It's about that sort of that story. So I was already thinking about that story in 1999, and I kept thinking about it as I do. I'm always have a whole bunch of stories in my head, just sort of simmering away, waiting to be, you know, dealt with and fully cooked up and served, I guess. But I didn't actually get around to it because I was writing other things until much later. Similarly with Golden Hand, I think from when I wrote The Creature in the Case, which was in like 2005, I think, I actually knew much of the story of Golden Hand. It just took time to fully realise it and then sit down and write it. I nearly always work things out in my head. I know the beginning, I nearly always know the end, and I know a few bits in the middle, which build up over years before I actually sit down and start writing them. And they may change, of course, but at least I think I know what I'm going to do before I start to write. So for me, I never left the Old Kingdom. It was always there. It was always in the back of my mind. That said, I did have to reread all my earlier books several times just to remind myself of key details. Mm-hmm. And there were times when I was writing Golden Hand, I was thinking, I've got to do this thing. Did I set that up? I can't remember. And I'd go back and I'd find, oh yeah, I did set it up. My subconscious knew. No, long ago. It's great when that happens. It's very nice when you feel like a previous version of yourself knew something that you didn't, and so they set things up.
That's really cool.
I think part of what I love about this series so much is because obviously the world is so large in your head, you just kind of like, I don't know how to express this, but you just kind of present this world, and it's not, you know, there's not reams and reams of setting up or explaining. Like from Sabriel, it's just like, this is the world, this is Anselstia, this is the Old Kingdom, Abhorsen, and it's just like, it's just there. And maybe
I'm a great believer in experiencing the world of the story with the characters. Yeah. So, and I love that myself as a reader when I'm reading other people's books. I like to just be with them when they're finding out stuff and not be told stuff or learn about it in a more sort of discursive way. I like to be very much with the characters in that world, and things begin to come together. And of course, not everyone likes this. I mean, some people prefer things to be more spelled out or better explained, or just not so mysterious. But I always feel that as long as you can create the illusion that it all works, and that's really what a book is an illusion anyway, really. But if you can make people believe there's more to it, that's what you need. There doesn't actually have to be more to it.
Or
you can work it out later. I mean, I've talked about this before. I think particularly with fantasy, and I've said before, you know, a fantasy novel should be like an iceberg. The text is the 10% that's visible above the surface, but you know there's this massive amount below. And someone like Tolkien, of course, actually worked it all out. He actually did work out all the 90% below everything, you know, the whole works. But you don't need to do that. You just need to create the illusion that it is there, and it will be there when you need it. So, and of course, either approach is equally valid. Obviously, it worked for Tolkien the way he did it. Though, to be honest, I wish he'd written more novels and less history and fewer languages, possibly, or not in so much depth. But that's my personal wishing as a reader. And so years ago I said in a talk about fantasy novels that a fantasy novel should be like an iceberg, the 10% visible and you feel the other 90% is there. I thought that was very clever. But then a few years after that I was reading a book about Hemingway, and Hemingway said all novels should be like an iceberg. Damn it, he got in there first. Well, you say something clever about writing, invariably someone else has already. If Hemingway hasn't said it, it'll be someone else, you know.
Well, talking about your personal wishes as a reader, I would obviously love another 10 or 20 novels. You talk about having these stories simmering away. Like, is there anything concrete you can tell us about? Will there be more, basically?
Almost certainly, but they won't be next.
Yeah. Okay.
The Old Kingdom, it is a very big world, and it's great to be in that big world. That's one of, it's one of the things I like about it. There's so much opportunity to tell stories within it. And I do have notes for all kinds of stories. And of course, in the Australian edition of Golden Hand, there is a bonus short story called Dr. Crake Crosses the Wall, which is unique to the Australian edition. So there's already another Old Kingdom short story, which people who buy the Australian edition of the novel will get. And that was just something, it was just a little idea. It's almost a little vignette about what it would be like to come to the wall from the south and have no idea what you're getting into. So it's a little story about a medical doctor who's assigned, you know, assigned to the army, Ancelstarian army on the wall, but has no clue about what he's getting into. And I've got there's going to be another Old Kingdom story which will probably be out sometime early next year, I think, which is actually about Sabriel's mother. It's actually about how her father met her mother. Tersiel and her mother. So that's sort of two-thirds written. It's been two-thirds written for about 9 months. So it's one of those things where quite often with short fiction in particular, I'll write quite a lot of it, but then I'll leave it until I can get it exactly right. So that there'll be more.
So I was actually going to ask you, because you have written so many books, do you stick to one project at a time or do you work on lots?
It's a good question, and the answer is I tend to work on a bunch of projects at one time, like a short order cook. Lots of cooking metaphors here. I normally have one sort of main project and I'll spend maybe 80% of my writing time on that, but I nearly always will be writing other things at the same time. I mean, I've just finished a couple of short stories. One is a horror story for a collection Ellen Datlow is doing. And I never think of myself as a horror writer, but other people do sometimes.
So your Old Kingdom creatures gave me nightmares.
I like horrific creatures and I like dark stuff, but I'm not a great fan of straight out horror as a rule myself, but I do like horror elements. And things which get called dark fantasy quite often.
But twisting it on its head can make it even scarier.
Yeah, but I have to confess I do like scary things within certain parameters. As a reader myself, I actually can't deal with contemporary horror, or particularly horror films, because they stay with me way too long. I think about them for weeks, months, and so I don't watch them because I know they'll stay with me too long. Put them in a fantasy setting or even historical and I'm fine. It's just if it's like right now I'm in trouble. Horror story and another one of my sort of high fantasy stories with Sir Hereward and Mr. Fitz, the duo where one's a little animated puppet who seems quite harmless and it of course isn't. so that'll be out in a collection next year. So things like that. I'm always doing stuff like that and dabbling with screenwriting, which I'm a successful novelist and I'm a very unsuccessful screenwriter so far. It could change at any moment, you never know. But I like doing different kinds of writing. I like to do different things.
Well, I think you've always been so great at drawing inspiration from really different areas. Like that's particularly evident, I think, in Creature in the Case, where it's like, and maybe this is because the majority of the story is set in Ancelsia, but it's like got this real like the 1920s mystery adventure feel mixed with fantasy, which is such like that is like just drugs to me. Like I just
This is all a reflection of stuff that I like myself. So that story really, I guess, is very influenced by John Buck and 39 Steps, but also the mystery writers like Dorothy Sayers, who I love. Yeah. Marjorie Allingham. So yes, I do. A lot of my writing, I guess, could be construed as sort of homages of different kinds to my favourite writers, though I hope that I make it enough my own that it's not immediately obvious.
I can say you definitely do, but those little...
But I'm always glad when other readers connect with these enthusiasms of mine, as with Newt's Emerald too.
I love that. Will you write more like that, Evan?
Well, I've outlined another one, so I would like to do that as well. They tend to have a bit of a smaller audience than the mainstream fantasy works that I do. Mm. But again, you never know. It's never stopped me from doing things anyway, like Frog Kisser coming up at the end of February.
I was wondering when we would talk about
it. Now we can talk about Frog Kisser.
So again, that's an example of me writing what I want to write, and as opposed to what necessarily publishes. I mean, to be honest, if I just wrote Old Kingdom books, all my publishers would be very, very happy.
I'd be happy, not just.
But then we
just. But then you wouldn't have the other stuff. So I try and balance it out, and I've been very fortunate that in general that works out, and publishers want to publish them, and people want to read, you know, a variety of my work, not just the one thing that I'm best known for.
So Sarah and I have been very, very lucky to read an early copy of Frog Kisser.
You'd be amongst the first in the world.
It is incredible. Both of us absolutely adored it.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like to give us your spiel?
On Frog Kisser? I haven't actually redeveloped one yet. I'm focusing on Golden Hand. Golden Hand's only out this week, and Frog Kisser's February. Frog Kisser is a kind of a fairy tale. It is the story of a young princess, Anya, who has to go on a quest to find the ingredients of a magical lip balm, a transmogrification reversal lip balm, that she needs to make in order to transform her sister's love of her life, a prince who's been turned into a frog. It's not her frog, it's her sister's frog. She's a very kind sister. Has been transformed by her extremely evil stepfather, and that's the basic setup. And Anya and her faithful dog Ardent, who is a talking dog, of course, have to go on this quest. And it perhaps seems fairly straightforward at first: ingredients of a magical lip balm. How hard can that be? But it gets more and more complicated as more and more transformed animals and people become involved. And I have a lot of fun with that story, while still trying to make it feel real. You know, within a sort of fairy tale wrapping, there's a giant, there's a good wizard. The good wizard isn't possibly what you might expect.
The good wizard is awesome.
I love the good wizard.
It was very, very funny.
Oh, thank you.
Hilarious.
I'm glad.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed myself writing. I mean, we were talking about it before. It was one of those books that just came out of nowhere. I just sat down and wrote the first chapter, and then I thought, I'll put it aside and I'll come back to it in due course. And I thought, oh no, I won't, I'm going to write the whole thing. And I wrote it quite swiftly and sort of completely with no publishers wanting it or anything. And luckily everyone, when they saw it, were very keen. So it's a lot of fun. I hope that others will also like it as much as you guys when it comes out in February.
I can't imagine people not loving it. It's just delightful.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad I got to read it so early, because now I have so many months in which I can tell everybody all about it.
Thank you.
And increase the enthusiasm.
Thank you. You can reread it as well.
Yeah.
If you reread.
Many
I'm
times.
A rereader. I don't know. Not everyone is.
I'm definitely a rereader.
I'm a rereader.
I reread Old Kingdom before I really wanted to start Golden Hand, but I wanted to reread everything.
And read your way
so
up.
It was just, so that everything was really fresh.
Good. Good.
And I had a moment where my willpower wavered a little bit at the end of Valpawsome, where I was just like, oh my God, I really want to know what happens next. But then I was like, no, I'm going through. So I went through and it was amazing. And can I be audacious enough to just tell you if you were to write other things in the future, this is my wish list.
Hit me with the wish list.
Things that I am curious about knowing more about. Let's call it a list of things I'm curious about. So the Sutherlings and them settling and... I'm a bit curious about that. I'm really curious about Tathiel.
Tathiel.
Yep. And I'm in love with Farron. And if there was more, I love her.
I like Farron too.
Yeah. I love her, and I love her interactions with characters, which I won't name because I feel that's a mild spoiler.
Yes. It's very hard to tell. I would say there's a good bet I'll do something else with Farron. I think that's quite a good chance. But I hate predicting because I really don't know. I've got notes for a number of different stories which could be done in different ways. and how I would tell them and which characters would be involved in them. It's hard to tell, but I'm reluctant to make a prediction, but hopefully,
happen.
I mean, touch wood, there will be at some point in the future other Old Kingdom books, and hopefully
also more on Celestia. Like,
yeah, well,
that would
yeah.
be so interesting.
Cause yeah,
we've had books that they're mostly usually Old Kingdom with Celestia
straddling
in.
The border a little bit. Yeah,
but I'm so interested in that world and in a world that exists alongside magic and is aware of it to an extent. But
aware of it in the north, but willfully
ignoring it.
The further away they get, the more likely let's just pretend that's not there.
And all the like little PG Woodhouseian fops.
I love PG Woodhouse too. So
You should just create reading lists and like just give them out. These are the books that I love. I would read them all.
You probably already have. From the sound of it, I think you already have.
Golden Hand was just like, I haven't been this excited and obsessed with a book since Isabel Carmody's final Overnerton book came out, lost my mind over. So this...
You have to wait a lot longer for that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to wait a while for this one, but...
Nowhere near that
Isabel, one. Isabel wins that waiting long time for books competition.
Definitely. Yeah. But, you know, it's so great to revisit those worlds that you fell so deeply in love with as a child and to still be able, you know, love and appreciate them as an adult. And just thanks for Golden Hand.
No, well, like... thank you for reading. And for selling them, of course, too.
That too. thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. And you can get Golden Hand as well as all of Garth's past and hopefully future books at Booktopia, www.booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.